Hi, and welcome to Hillbrook School's Center for Teaching Excellence podcast. I am Bill Selleck. I am our Director of Technology. And on this episode,
the coordination of collaboration and co-teaching, flexible spaces, and technology. Because somehow the way those three initiatives resonate together allow me to really rethink my approach to what teaching is, what school is, what learning is.
That was Julia Rubin. She is Hillbrook 7th and 8th grade English teacher. She will be joining us along with a couple other people talking about what technology looks like in the classroom today. So I thought we could start off by looking at the TPAC framework. So for those of you that have no idea what this is about, it is the T is technology, pedagogy, and content. And it's a way of thinking about how you can meaningfully integrate technology into the classroom. It doesn't operate in isolation. It's always technology and pedagogy and content. So we're going to be exploring that in a few different ways. We're going to be looking this episode at 5 years of the iPad. We're also going to be looking at mobile inquiry, iPad doctors, tech squad, other student-led support. And then finally, we're going to have a live show at the end of this season, the post-iPad. So what's next? What's the next step for technology in the class? You are listening to the Hillbrook CTE Podcast. Our story starts off April 3rd, 2010. When the first iPad was sold. Since then, as of December 2015, there have been 6 generations of the iPad. So it's easy to forget what life was like back in the Wild West of iPads. This was back when there was not an easy way to manage them, back when iPads didn't have cameras, back when the camera that it did have was a third of a megapixel. So in 2010, there were 200,000 apps. Compare that now, 2015, there are 1.5 million apps. There were 3,000 native iPad apps in 2010. Compare that now to where there are 725,000. So it's 20 times more apps. So if we go back even further, not just 2010, way back to 1983, Steve Jobs had a little Q&A after one of his speeches when he was announcing Lisa. So for those Mac geeks, you know a little bit about Lisa. For those that don't, it was a $10,000 computer, and Steve, in one of his questions, was asked, what's next? Here is his response.
Apple strategy is really simple. What we want to do is we want to put an incredibly great computer in a book that you can carry around with you that you can learn how to use in 20 minutes. That's what we want to do, and we want to do it this decade. And we really want to do it with a radio link in it, so you don't have to hook up to anything. You're in communication with all these larger databases and other computers. We don't know how to do that now. It's impossible technically.
Fast forward 27 years later, and he announces the iPad. 5 years after that, here we are, wondering what we're actually going to do with it, what the promise of the iPad was, and where we go from here. So we start off in our first act talking with Christina Pock. She is our middle head of school. At the time, in 2010, she was teaching 7th and 8th grade history. She talks a little bit about the hope of the iPad, the promise of the iPad.
There were so many possibilities that we could not even dream. We don't know what it was. It's like Star Trek, go where you've never gone before. And that was the feeling of it. It's like, we don't know what this is going to open up. We don't know if it's actually going to be something beneficial that it opens up or not. But it's kind of exciting to find this out, isn't it?
So keep in mind, in 2010, the iPhone 3G was as high-tech as it got. That was absolutely cutting edge. So trying to think about the iPad and what a device that students could hold in their hands and carry with them, having that in the classroom, this was revolutionary. Christina goes on to talk about the computer lab, which she refers to as...
You would call it the printer lab, right? Where you go to print things. So that was a big issue about where's the printer, where you can access the printer to print something, and it was always the computer lab. So, and then when we came to her about iPad issues in that first year of piloting, you know, we all were trying to figure it out, and she herself was also trying to figure it out. So yeah, I would call it the computer printer lab, probably was what it was. Then saw it shift to the iLab, where, so I'm trying to recall, it was before the making lab, and then we began with the flexible furniture there. And it was through Don Orth asking me if I wanted to be part of this research of having one section of my class, you know, just to see what's the difference of doing that. And to make a long story short, I saw more possibilities and more usage on my end in that iLab because of the flexible furniture, because of the abilities that it provided the students, and space. And sometimes I used both classrooms, my classroom and that classroom, just because it was nearby. And for me, it was more the physical location that allowed me to be back and forth there. And yet, when it was my wish and dream, it was to make an iLab in my classroom. And then that happened, that hope and dream. And that's when the coalescing of the use of the iPad, as well as the flexible furniture and learning spaces, really came together. And I remember when, in speaking at an iPad 2 conference, this resonated a lot with a lot of teachers, that, wow, this all seems to really come together. It really makes sense why technology is being used and how that opens up. And it really is. It's like we're trying to provide different platforms, different spaces for kids to learn in the different ways that they learn, and allow them to spread their wings and go, you know, in so many different directions. So I love that options opportunity for the students.
It's hard to tease apart what innovation looks like in a classroom. We have found that through iPads, we have greater flexibility, and so furniture and flexible furniture has become increasingly important. It's also easy to think that technology and iPads in particular have worked incredibly well since day one. They haven't. Christina finishes up with us talking about some bumps in the road.
Having to approach it in a manner of, okay, there's gonna be a few bumps, but how do we learn from that? And I've heard of teachers who've seen such great aspects of their students as they build resilience toward troubleshooting or figuring that out and problem solving, which I think are life skills. You need those people in the workplaces who are willing to push things through or think, hey, there's other ways to approach this. How do we do this technology-wise? That rather than give me the sheet that tells me step by step what I need to do. So I love that we took our students in some ways through that. So
there's this myth out there that schools and teachers that are doing really amazing things with technology somehow get it right, and they don't have any bumps along the way. They don't have any problems. And that's just simply not the case. Those that are doing the most exciting things tend to have the most problems and tend to make the most mistakes. Up next, we talk with Julia Rubin. She's talking about using Google Docs early with students and some lessons learned.
Well, I can remember, like, there are a few examples of things I can remember that I realized later needed a lot more, like, structuring and framing and even some modeling. And I sort of assumed they would just be, it would be sort of intuitive and clear, like, what appropriate use of a tool would be. So, like, an example of that, you know, when I first started here, this was my first year using iPads, we were using Google Docs, and, you know, like, we were doing a group, I don't even remember exactly the assignment we were working on, but we were working on, like, a group collection of searching research and terms around poetry. And basically, as soon as I didn't do a lot of scaffolding for the students about, like, what would be appropriate or inappropriate to put into the doc. So, like, as soon as everyone was invited to the doc to participate, it became very clear very quickly that, like, it was, like, going to be, like, really, really fun to, like, send messages to friends or like go into other people's areas of a Google Doc and like change words and leave them secret notes. And like, so there was like this way in which that experience like immediately was just like, oh, this is a moment to be social. And like, this is a moment to like, just forget the task. And like, we all have access to this one forum that's sort of public with us and like public with our teacher. And we're going to just like play and like forget all about like what the assignment was. I remember that. I was like, ooh, Google Docs. I was like, how do I use Google Docs for its like benefits and not allow it to be like this free for all of like secret messages and like funny words and jokes?
So how do you move beyond that?
So now I think it's really been a mindset shift rather than like thinking this is the tool I want to use and this is what we're doing in class. How can we marry those two things? It's like, these are my learning objectives. What tools are the best tools to use to meet those objectives? And for me, like, although that sounds like a pretty simple realization to come to, it's actually not. It hasn't been that straightforward, you know, because like there's so much of technology is so exciting to use and you just want to use it, you know, immediately. And but actually like returning to the pedagogy and curriculum, like the actual goal you're trying to meet, the actual skill you're trying to build, and letting that inform like a set of tools that you have access to. That has what's been able to improve upon like early mistakes, I think.
So without calling it out, Julia is referring to the framework TPAC, this magical intersection of technology, pedagogy, and content knowledge. At Hillbrook, it would definitely include classroom environment into that mix. We know that environment is not neutral, so that could be who's in the room. Definitely includes iPads, furniture, whiteboards, all of those things.
So I think about the relationship between flexible classrooms and technology all the time. And also, like, in addition to that, the third piece of it is collaboration with teachers and interdisciplinary work. So for me, like, that's kind of like the three dimensions of what's allowing me to feel innovative as a teacher at Hillbrook is the coordination of collaboration and co-teaching, flexible spaces, and technology. Because somehow the way those three initiatives resonate together allow me to like really rethink my approach to what like teaching is, what school is, what learning is. So one project, I can speak sort of specifically to a project that used space. This is something we did last year, and it had to do with kind of breathing new life into the Hillbrook Writing Guide, which is the craft manual we use to teach analytical writing in 6th through 8th grades at Hillbrook. So by the time students reach 8th grade, they're really fluent in this craft manual. They know how to write a 5-paragraph essay. They know how we talk about thesis statement, topic sentence, analysis, all that good stuff. And they have an opportunity to teach younger students who are still learning those skills in an innovative way how those pieces all fit together. So what we did was have them create mini lessons by video on an iPad and then basically create an interactive classroom. So the videos were then accessible using a QR code reader to connect to a video that older students had made. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So the older students created the content and then the younger middle school students were able to consume that content?
Consume it and rate it, like talk about its quality and the things that they didn't understand and what they did understand. But the space allowed that to be, like, I really liked the idea of integrating the craft guide into the classroom. Because it's like it created even more like resonance with like the learning they were doing in that specific space. And so then when reinforcement for thesis statement was necessary, I could be like, go over there and like look at the thesis statement video or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was one way in which we tried to like, and there's sort of a, there's a collaborative element there too, in that the 8th graders were working in groups to create their lessons and teach the 7th graders. That was an effort to try to draw together those three different sides of, like, where I think we're most innovative.
So back when we were in school, we had to use pencil and paper and textbooks. That's really the only choice we had. But now we're at a really interesting place where we still have those, but we also have iPads. Let's see how that plays out in the English classroom.
A lot of times what's different now is that when I turn kids loose to work on something together. Like, for example, we're working on Shakespearean sonnets right now, and we've also just kind of learned this list of literary devices and elements, and sonnets are a great way to, like, further reinforce understanding of literary devices. So, like, when kids are working with a sonnet and they've kind of come together around a key idea or theme, and I'll say, now pull this apart and let me know what elements and devices you're observing that construct that theme, they're in a group and they'll self-select to make the Google Doc. And when they do that on their own, they have a much higher rate of success. So, like, when the students now know that that tool is one of their tools, and they choose themselves, like, are we going to use paper and pencil? Are we going to use Google Docs? So there's something, like, nuanced, I think, about having them have ownership of Google Docs themselves and then choose to use it without me prompting them to. Then it comes out better.
The last thing that Julia talks about is giving feedback to students on their writing. This is one of those things that can be exceedingly difficult for teachers to really communicate and help students grow. So the way that Julia did that is she would record her screen and her voice and give those to students. And she explains what students did with them.
They'll listen to it, and I'll either give them a reflection sheet where they have to set up, like, a plan for revision and then meet with me and talk to me about it. Or they get a clean copy of their paper, and then they listen to it and mark it up as they're interpreting my feedback, which is fun. Or sometimes it's just, like, fodder for the next one-to-one conference conversation. But there's, like, a lot of cool things that can develop around after the video is made. What do you do with it with the kids to actually make them feel like they're in a place of growth and feel able to interpret teacher feedback? Because I think it can't be stressed enough that, like, kids trying to interpret what a teacher wants out of them and then deliver on that and feel like they're learning is, like, so hard. It's way harder than it seems, like, from an adult's perspective.
So that brings us to year five. We end our journey sitting down with Kate Ferguson, our literacy coach, and Kelly Skolton, tech coach. Kate and Kelly have been doing a really cool collaborative project with fourth graders around literacy. They've been using Explain Everything, an app that helps them capture student thinking, and they're using Blogger as a way to store that and as a way for students to reflect on their own progress. Kate starts us off.
Well, one of the early stages in writing is being able to tell your story. And it's not necessarily about the output, but about the story itself. And so using different apps that allow the student to just verbally tell their story is the beginning stage of writing, because it allows each student to see themselves as a storyteller and that they are able to generate their own ideas, and they can still have a way to express them even if they don't have the skills to write the actual words.
And they can go back and listen to what they've said and do a form of editing at a very young age, because they can go back and listen to themselves and say, oh gosh, I want to change this, or I want to make this different thing happen in my story. And with writing, they wouldn't necessarily be able to go back and read their own writing. So that's huge.
Kelly goes on to describe how students are using Explain Everything. This is an app that allows you to take a photo of something or draw something and then narrate it.
Oftentimes, the students we were working with had quite a bit of understanding of what they were reading, a deeper level of understanding of what they were reading, but were unable to express that written. This idea of using Explain Everything for them to record over an image of text so that they could use the text to highlight text evidence as they're explaining their thinking allowed students who normally wouldn't be able to express their thinking via, you know, paper, pencil, or sticky note. It allowed us to get a better picture of where the understanding was and where they needed help.
And the great thing about the tool Explain Everything is that it offers the students the ability to either take a picture of the text and do a voiceover, or they could take a picture of the text and highlight. So if the teacher was asking students to show evidence from the text rather than writing out a quote from the book, they can just take a picture and highlight in the app, and then do a voiceover for the students who have difficulty with written output. The different modalities, if you will, within Explain Everything are really beneficial for those students with difficulty with output.
So students create their videos to capture their thinking around whatever teaching point was for that day, and then they upload it to their own blogger site, and then, as Kate mentioned, we were then looking at the videos to help inform instruction for the next day. So the students kind of have like a timeline of their thinking, and you know, it all dates it, and so they can kind of see the progression, and that helps with the reflection piece. They can go back and look at, for specific things that they're noticing about their own thinking over time.
This is one of those magical projects that is at the center of technology and pedagogy and content. It's a good reminder that technology is not the answer. At the heart of this needs to be a teacher that knows students, knows where they are, and knows how to help move them forward. And here's where Kelly really nails it.
To ask students just to reflect is kind of, for fourth graders, a little bit ambiguous, and so we realized that we needed to break it down a bit and give them very specific things that they were to watch out for, and kind of see themselves as learners over time and notice things about what they were doing and what they needed to do, what they needed to work on, and so we kind of had that in order to help them construct a reflection, a meaningful reflection.
After they have several reflections uploaded to Blogger, they use this rubric that has the identified teaching points, and they go back and they listen to their blog posts and see where they were able to apply the different concepts from the mini lessons. And then from there, they can make their own goal for next steps for themselves as a learner.
And this rubric is actually just a checklist, basically, mm-hmm. right? It's nothing too fancy.
Nothing fancy.
No, it's something that they write on their dry erase board tables. Like, the four or five teaching points, they jot them down, and then they tally when they notice that they've done it through as they reflect on their blog posts.
Right, yeah.
The iPad has enabled us to make classrooms even more student-centered. The most exciting thing, though, is that our students can now become content creators. They can become movie makers. They can become authors. And unlike us as students back in the day, before we had the most powerful storytelling device ever created, our students can publish this and share it with the world. They can create movies, put them up on YouTube for millions to see. They can publish them in the iBook store for millions to read. Now, whether or not millions of people actually read this is irrelevant. The more exciting thing is that they have that potential. You no longer have to be an intern for years and years and go to film school to be able to be a movie maker and have people see the story you want to tell. Here's a great example of what that looks like in the fourth grade classroom.
Last year, Sam Kelly and I collaborated on our nonfiction writing unit, and we taught the kids the difference between an ebook and a hard book, mm-hmm. and had them assess themselves as readers and how they best learn how to read or best learn about information, whether it's from an ebook or a hard book. And then in the writing unit, the students had the choice of either creating an ebook or a hard book. Mm-hmm. And Kelly did a lot of lessons in the library. And then we did lessons in the classroom, and we tried to integrate reading, writing, and technology in our nonfiction unit. That mm-hmm. was pretty interesting.
And for some students, it was all paper, right?
Yes.
So paper book and then paper output.
Yeah, it was mm-hmm. all paper. Mm-hmm. And other kids created an ebook, and they had their text because they were learning how to write narrative nonfiction. And then they uploaded pictures because we were teaching them about text features, and they had a glossary, a table of contents, they had captions, and then some of the students even did voice recording to go with the pictures that they decided to embed in their ebooks. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty neat project.
I'm thinking about the one that was about chickens. Even the illustrations were drawn with crayons, and they just take a photo of it.
Oh, right, right.
So it was a really cool hybrid. It wasn't just digital or just
animal. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Really shows kind of like how having devices readily available and just part of the toolkit that kids have available to them really impacts the integration. So it's no longer kind of like, okay, now we're all on iPads or we're all, you know, it's iPad time. We've kind of shifted more away from that to more of kind of a seamless, like, oh yeah, some kids are using it because that's what they need. Some kids aren't, or they, you know, it's not a, as kind of a separate, seen as much as a separate thing as it was in the beginning.
And maybe that's the promise of the iPad. It becomes ubiquitous. It becomes just another tool. Students don't look at a pencil and say, oh my goodness, look at this tool that enables me to write and then to erase my thoughts. No, it's just, it's yet another thing. Julia puts a nice bow on this week's episode, reflecting on the last 5 years of iPads at Hillbrook School.
In my own head, like when I first got to Hillbrook and someone handed me an iPad, I was like, I photocopied the entirety of The Outsiders, and then I put it, made it a PDF, and then I put it in a backpack. And I was like, I'm using the iPad! And that was basically as much as my brain could, like, handle in that moment of what it meant to use, like, technology in an English classroom. And it's like, when I think back to 5 years ago, and then I'm like, we've just come a long way.
So join us this season. And by season, I mean school year, but it sounds so much cooler to say season. Join us this season as we talk about technology in the classroom, as we peel back the layers of what technology can actually do to help students reach their highest individual potential. Our website is hillbrookcte.org, where you'll find links to download the podcast, play it directly from the website, lots and lots of resources and examples and photos of what we were talking about in this episode. Join us next episode as we talk with some science teachers talking about mobile inquiry and a look at everything from music videos in science class to sit spots and deep thinking. It's going to be a great season. Thanks for listening.